That's right. We're here this afternoon, a very special Meet Me at the Diner. We are here with Nita Hosey. She's a very well-known person in our community. She certainly has done a lot of things, very active in our community. Many of you may know her from a wedding planner. She's been a Girl Scout leader, a children's pastor, even a puppeteer. She has done about everything there is to do, but probably most proud of raising foster children. What was it, 92 foster children.
My mom says she thinks I lost count. She said, surely there was more.
Well, you know, Nita, you really are to be commended, because foster children can be a handful. Foster children are in need of someone to set some rules and regulations and give them the structure that we as parents take as a normal course of things, but children in foster care quite often don't, do they?
Well, I remember when they first came as like a honeymoon period.
Right.
They were doing everything they could to be just perfect and right, and then they would do the rejection thing of, I'm going to reject you before you can reject me. Mm-hmm. And many of them had been moved so many times. And
that's a problem, you know, with foster care, isn't it?
Yeah, one of our kids, when she came to us, she was 15, and she'd already been in 72 placements.
That's hard to that's hard to even imagine. But foster care here in the state, and really, I guess, probably across the nation, is a best answer solution, but it's not the best situation.
Well, I've always said if I can just do as much as I can while I have them, give them a little bit of stability, try to help them know where to go from here, you know. And then you can't always do it. And now my famous line is, they don't have my genes.
Right. But, I mean, it's an interim, supposed to be an interim situation. It's designed to give them, rather than being in an orphanage,
right,
to be more
home.
In a family situation, to be much better.
That's right. And it, you know, and it's much needed. We don't have enough foster parents, and even some people that don't think that they could foster child after child after child may could be a respite home, you know, because like group homes have to close sometimes so all the employees can have a vacation. Well, those kids all have to go somewhere. So if your house is licensed, then you can take them for a weekend, or you can have them for a week at Christmas or Thanksgiving or sometime to give others a break. I remember us having a funeral out of state, and the kids couldn't go with us because they couldn't go out of state. And we had to search and search to find another foster home that we could put them in till we got back. And that was really hard. And so our last, probably after our 92 kids, we did respite, you know, and we would knew that we, when they were coming and knew when they were leaving.
Well, it certainly has been quite a journey for you, hasn't it?
Yes, and I don't know that we would have done it if we could have had a house full of kids. You know, we tried for 8 years to get pregnant and couldn't. Had this plan all made out, you know, that we were going to, you know, 2 years, we were going to build our house, we were going to throw the pills away, and we were going to have children, and you know how you do. And our plan didn't come across like we thought it would. And so then we put in for adoption, and after we were married 5 years, and it took 3 years to get our first child. We had a lot of disappointments. Over and over again, girls would say, oh, we're going to give you our baby, and blah, blah, blah. And then they'd get to the hospital, and either them or a parent or a grandparent would say no. And so then our heart would be broken all over again. So then with Nikki, our first child that we adopted, she'll be 40 this month, can you believe? She and I would go to Bowers Rogers Children's Home, and we would volunteer, help them with homework, sit and play with the little ones or whatever, you know. And one day when we got ready to leave, we got in the car, and Nikki started crying. And I said, honey, what in the world? And she said, Mama, I heard one of the workers say that those four siblings are going to be put in four separate homes for Christmas because nobody will take all four of them. And she said, can't we take them, Mama? Can't we? I said, honey, you just can't take them. You have to be licensed. So we proceeded to call DSS and find out if we could get those kids, just for Christmas. That's what we thought. And next thing you know, we were foster parents and 92 later. Yeah. And we wanted to adopt many times, different ones that came in, but for different reasons, we weren't able to adopt them. And several of them didn't want to be adopted. They kept having this hope that their family would come back, that they would someday get to go home. You know, I don't care how bad your parents are or whatever's happened to you, they're still your parents.
Well, I think you could speak to that very well, Nita. I mean, your family, I mean, my goodness, you had quite a growing up time. Your dad was very abusive, I understand, by reading parts of the book.
Yeah, I would have been a foster child if they'd have known about us. All four of us kids would have. We lived out in the boonies, out where there was no phone, you know, nothing there. But thankfully, my dad and I made peace before he passed on, and I waited to write the book after he was gone. But I think about one difference with our family was that I realized as I was writing the book that we never went hungry. We might have been poor, and we didn't have our mom there after my mom and dad divorced and all. But my dad always had a garden. He had chickens and pigs, and he went fishing and hunting, and we had turtle stew and, you know, frog legs. And I learned to cook all those at 9 years old. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
So anyway, I think because of my background, it made it easier for me to take these children in. And my husband probably many times would have said, that's enough, no more, we're not going to do it. Because he had a great family. Mom and dad was always there. His brothers and sisters always lived in one home. And, you know, so it was a little different for him. But he did have a kind heart toward children and has always loved them. So.
Well, I think there are many instances in the book where you can see how difficult I remember reading part of it where your dad would give you $20 to do the grocery shopping. And as prices were going up, he was mad because you couldn't buy all the things you needed to with that $20. So you challenged him to go to the grocery store. And what did he end up spending? $60?
Right.
I
followed behind him and just going, ah, ha, ha, ha.
And after that, what, he gave you $40?
Then he gave me $40. So yeah. So I became a great budgeter because of that.
Yeah.
I know when the clearance shopping is. All my kids that came to me, I knew where to go buy clothes to, you know, so that they could have nice clothes without costing so much. I remember one time going to JCPenney's and they had marked down jeans for $1.97. I didn't even look at sizes. I just pulled all the jeans off and put them in my buggy.
Probably the reason that they say no more than six or something like that now, right,
Nita? Probably that person that messed that up, yeah.
But quite an experience. And I mean, as you look back over your life, it must be very rich with a lot of happiness, but a lot of sadness sometimes too.
Right. Well, that's what makes you who you are, you know, is what you walk through. And like, I don't know that I would have ever become a foster parent if I'd have had three or four kids, you know, of my own. But I know that when those kids came to me, I could see the pain in their eyes. And I was able to be strong, you know, and say, you can act up all you want to, but I'm not sending you back. You know, you are stuck with me and you have met your match, you know. And so we did it, you know, with a lot of love, but also a lot of firmness too. And the hard thing was some of the kids we would get, like those first four, they found them living in a car, eating out of trash cans. But when they came to our house, they would hoard food. They would, you know.
Understand that,
yeah,
sure.
Uh-huh. So, and we had a hard time convincing them that they were never going to miss a meal, that they were not going to have those problems, you know. So
it's hard to realize in the United States of America that we have these type of situations, isn't it?
There's hunger right here.
There is.
Yeah. And neglect, a lot of neglect.
Right. And so, you know, foster parenting, we never seem to have enough. I've done several interviews over the years with organizations that try to get people to foster parent. And I think sometimes, I guess, the requirements, you were just telling me the windows in your house.
Wow. I tell people all the time that if they would go and check everybody's home, there'd be no kids in foster care because they check everything. just continually had our to make sure our fire extinguishers were right, our smoke detectors, which are all good things. But I couldn't even have my dish detergent under the sink. You know, in every door had to have a lock on it. You couldn't do like you do at your home and maybe have a medicine cabinet in your bathroom that you put your little aspirins or whatever. No, everything had to be boxed up under, you know. So that was kind of, you know, learning and difficult and so forth that way. But at the end, on our 92nd child, they came to us and said they were going to close our home because of the size of our windows. Now, we had lived in the same house for 40-something years, you know, and we had just put new windows in the year before. $500 a window, you know, to do the weatherproof and flipping out and all these kind of things that they do. Now, if they'd have told us that we needed a certain size window, then we would have.
But what was the reason readjusted. They did this?
Well, one child somewhere in South Carolina had gotten burned in a house, and the firemen couldn't get through a window. So then that, I don't know at the homes that closed. Our home was not the only one that closed. Now, 6 months later, they changed that and opened it back up, but we were like, no, we're done. We are done.
You didn't want to go for an even 100?
Yeah, well, I always thought it would been nice, but my husband was like, no. That's it.
You have to give a lot of your time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like you said, there's a lot of heartbreaks. In mm-hmm. one case, if I remember correctly, they came in the middle of the night and mm-hmm. you were in the process of adopting this mm-hmm. child.
Yeah, this is where we got I Can't Walk This Road Again from. He was our 23rd child, and when we got him, he was failure to thrive. He was on oxygen and a heart monitor.
They find him with none of these things on him?
On him and laying in his waist and roaches crawling over him and just really a sad situation.
He was going to die. I mean, mm-hmm. right.
He had quit crying. The first 3 days I had him, he wouldn't even cry. And I remember taking my husband's big sweatshirt and putting it on and putting the baby up under it against my skin and just rubbing his little head and saying, because he was only little 6 pounds at 2 months.
Wow.
You know,
he was
so tiny. And so I would just rub his little head and talk to him. So when I took him back, Dr. Bonetti was our doctor back then, and he's still doctor to some of our kids. And he said, I can't believe this is the same baby we gave you. I said, what do you mean? He said, he had failure to thrive. I went, what does that mean? And he said, oh, we didn't think he'd make it. I said, you put a baby in my home and you didn't think he was going to live? I was like, oh, no. So, and then they would continue to say to us, do not get attached. Do not get attached. Well, you're...
How do you get attached to a child that you've had up against your skin mm-hmm. just trying to make it breathe?
Well, you're attached to all of them. Time they come in your home. You know, I still think of several that I've never seen again, you know. I wonder where they are and what's happening with them and hoping and praying that they've had a change in their life. But, we had put in for adoption. He had been with us almost 2 years at this point. And we were going to the Foster Care Review Board, which is a board that can hear everything. The parents, the foster parents, mm-hmm. the DSS, everybody that's involved with this child. They can see all their health records, everything. And so they help make a decision of what, you know, what will happen with this child. And so they're the ones that encouraged us to go ahead and adopt because the mother and father had not come and done the doing all of the classes and everything that they were supposed to do. And so first I got a call, anonymous call, saying, I can't tell you who I am, but I think you're too nice a person for this to happen to you. They're coming to get your baby. And I called my lawyer. Our lawyer was in Columbia. I'd gotten to where I didn't trust anybody anymore. And I called and he said, they can't do that. You're already in adoption procedure. And so he said, let me call. So he calls me back and he says, get in your car and drive. I don't want to know where you are. I don't want you to tell anybody. Now, this
is back before cell phones
before
and everything.
Before cell phones. Now, my husband worked 12-hour shifts at Monsanto. So he had already gone to work. I had no way of getting in touch with him to let him know any of this was going on. Couldn't tell him until the next morning. I stopped at a payphone and talked to my mom and told her that I would call her in the morning and find out if things were okay. And I was just driving around frantically trying to figure out what to do. And it's just a different time. We didn't have, you know, all of the resources we have now to work with. And I finally, if I cried, he cried. So I had to keep my composure. So finally, he was so tired of being in the car seat that I stopped at a little rinky-dink motel, and tried to find something real cheap to stay at. And I laid there and watched him sleep. And every time the wall would creak or I'd hear a noise, I just knew they were coming to get my baby. So next morning I called.
Did you feel like you were on the run, right?
Yes. Yeah. It was scary. And I was by myself. You know, it wasn't like me and my husband or me and my mom or me and a friend.
Right, but the bad thing is you were on your run for something you were doing that was right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that is so bad that it's so wrong. Yes.
Yeah. So then the next morning when I called, my mom says, he says you can come home now. So we go to court. There's five lawyers in the courtroom. And the judge looks over the bench and he goes, this must be a mighty important baby to have this many lawyers in one room. And right before I went in, the mother had come up. And this is when I knew that this was not her pushing it. She looked at me and she said, I gave him birth, but you gave him life. Mm-hmm. And she says, if I can't have him, I want you to have him. So she wasn't even fighting,
trying to get him back.
Fighting this way. And so anyway, we got to stay. And the lawyer, the judge said, I want all of you to go by the law, and I want you to let this go the way the system is supposed to go, mm-hmm. You know. So we kind of let our guard down for a while. We think everything's okay. And I had gone to do a wedding rehearsal, and it was an outdoor wedding, and Frank had gone with me with the baby and was watching him and while I was directing, and I said, I've got a little bit of decorating to do, and he's sleepy, why don't you go ahead and take him on home, and I'll be home in a few. So he took him on home and put him to bed. When I came in, I always do my checklist, and I was sitting on the couch, and I was going over and highlighting, making sure I had all
for
the bouquets,
event,
the boutonnieres,
the next day,
everything,
right.
Everything done. And a police car pulled up in our yard. And I was like, what the world? And I went running back and I said, Frank, come and look. There's a police car. And he said, oh, we live out in the country. Said, you know, you got to be coming here, coming back. And they're looking for somebody. So he went out.
Right, he was.
He went outside. And when he came back, and we had a picture window. And when he came back in front of it, I could see his face was white as a ghost. And he came in. He said, they came to take our baby. And that was the hardest. This is 11:30 at night.
That's right.
On a Friday night.
We're going to have to come back there. It's time for South Carolina Radio News. We'll be back. Don't you go away. The antique vintager has arrived in Greenwood. He's been in Greenwood, but he's been incognito. Now unveiled for the very first time, the antique vintager, our one and only Jeff Eller, is debuting on the national stage with his podcast. Shouldn't you be one of the first to come in and see him and see what you have with What's It Worth? Can you sell it? Do you want to sell it? And should you sell it? Only the antique vintager can tell you such things. So come and see us at 637 Durst Avenue East. Call first for your appointment. 864-229-6613. The antique vintager, Jeff Eller, is in the building. Oh, that's right. We're right back here on WCRS. My very special guest is Nita Hosey. She's written a book, I Can't Walk This Road Again. It's about foster parenting and adoption. And coming up this Saturday, she is going to be one of the authors that is at the book fair, authors fair, that is going to be at the Greenwood Library in the Veterans Auditorium from 2 to 4 at the library. So there's quite a group of writers that are going to be there. Carol Bledsoe, who's written the memoir on the Swinging Medallions, is coming to town.
I just finished reading that.
Yeah, he's coming to town. We've got Karen Petit. We'll have her new book For Christmas out there. That one's going to be there. Tony Armstrong Sample, Eric Smith, Connie Turpak, Rebecca Timms, Lee Windham. Got Fred Bassett, Cheryl Eni, C. Hope Clark, and Harold Lawrence. All of these people and more are going to be there. And it's a great opportunity to bring the kids and come out and talk to these authors. You know, we were talking about your story, and we really should finish the story. We had to break right there at bottom of the hour. But very difficult situation for you who had wanted to have children, couldn't have children, started doing the adoption process, ended up doing foster care so you could have more children and satisfy your adopted daughter, I guess we could say. And then you're in the process.
I tell her all the time it's your fault that you had this many kids.
and then you're in the process of adopting the, 23rd foster child, because that one was special to you. You'd had it since he was a very small baby. And we were right at the part in this story where they had come to, the police had shown up at 11:30 on a Friday night. You had a wedding that Saturday afternoon. Yes. You had just gotten home. What happened?
When the police officers came in, the hard part was they were crying too, because they were the police officers that had removed him from the other home.
So they knew the situation.
They knew the situation. They stood there and they said, "This is the hardest thing that we've ever had to do. And here we are waking him up from sleep and having to dress him," and me and my husband both crying, so that would make him cry more, and trying to get him dressed. And then she wanted our car seat, and I was so mad. I said, "If she wants to come and get my baby, she better have a car seat."
And this was the DSS caseworker.
And she would not even come in the house. She would not show her face to us because she knew she was doing wrong.
And the adoption process had already started. They didn't have any reason to take the child away.
Claimed that the mother had done what she was supposed to, and I knew she had not. He had not been for any overnight visits. She rarely showed up for visitation. She had not finished the parenting classes, on and on and on. I could name. She didn't have a job. She was living with a boyfriend. It was just nothing to make it like it should be that way. I don't know if we talked about when we went to court the time before. Right before we went into court, she came up to me and said, "I gave him birth, but you gave him life, and if I can't have him, I want you to have him." So I knew then she wasn't even fighting to get
it. She wasn't pushing this issue, but they took the child.
Screaming and pulling him off of us, I collapsed on the floor. There was years I couldn't talk about this at all. In fact, I was still sitting in the doorway at 2:30 in the morning screaming and crying. I remember screaming out at her and saying, "You are the lowest of lows." I was just so angry and so mad.
I mean, it's so unbelievable that they would come at 11:30 on a Friday night.
But they knew we couldn't get to our lawyer, and they knew we couldn't get to anybody to help intervene.
Yeah, and so, possession is 9/10 of the law, isn't it? Yes.
So then at 2:30, this was before we had block numbers, we had, you know, cell phones or whatever.
Right.
I realized that the state director would have a phone, and I called information and got his number, and I couldn't quit crying hardly to tell him, and I kept saying, "You let them take my baby away. You promised me you would make it go by the way it should go," so it was really, really hard. And I had panic attacks. I couldn't hardly leave the house. I would just sit on the couch, and he had a silky where he'd pull my slip out from under my clothes and would hold it. And I sat there with that in his bear and just would just cry for days on end.
That had to be the hardest thing in your life.
It was.
And you never got him back.
No. It was a long, long struggle.
which but, talks about more in the book.
In the book,
you go through,
right.
I mean, if you want to know more about it, I Can't Walk This Road Again, Foster Parenting and Adoption. And she will have some of those books, won't
she? I will,
she?
And,
yes.
And we will autograph them. And if you can't come on Saturday, they are at the Alcoves and at McCaslin's Bookstore. But if you'd like an autograph copy, we'd love for you to come to the Greenwood Library to meet a lot of us.
Right, sure, the author's fair. Mm-hmm. So, but that was number 23, and you told me that you had foster parented 92 children, so even though you said you couldn't do this anymore, something must have happened.
Well, we tore up our license, and we just weren't going to ever do it again, and my mother called. She had stayed in as a foster parent. She had, I think, 32 foster kids herself after we talked her into. She got licensed because of Andrew, because of the oxygen heart monitor, all the problems he had. I couldn't leave him with just anybody. Even our church had CPR training, infant CPR training for nursery, because I couldn't leave him
right.
with just anybody. And so she stayed in just in case Andrew would come back into care. And she called me this particular day, and she said, "Need I have you a baby?" And I started crying right away, and I said, "Mom, I can't walk this road again." And she said, "But he's adoptable. He is. They've said he's going to be adoptable." I laid on that floor that day, and I cried to God, and I said, "If this is you, you open the door wide. If it's not, slam it shut now. I can't do this again." So anyway, it took us several months to get relicensed. As if we hadn't already done all this, we had to go from square
one.
Well,
you tore up the license there, Nita.
And we got licensed in a different county. And so anyway, we took him, and he is our second adopted child. So we did, but it took us 2 years before we were able to even adopt him. So it's a long process.
And then I guess you, in the meantime, you were taking other foster children.
Oh, the police knew that if anybody would take them at 2:30 in the morning, it'd be us. Or right before we'd get ready to go to church on Wednesday, you know, they would come in and have these kids, and we'd go, "Oh, no, what are we going to put on them?" You know, and try to work it out. So we became known as the home. And that was one reason we found out later that they didn't want us to adopt again, is because they wanted to keep our home open for foster care. And they were afraid if we filled our home up that we wouldn't. But thank goodness there are some laws that foster parents don't have to worry about this as much as they, you know, as I did back then. Now they have to give you a 10-day notice before they move a child out of your home. They have to, you know, there's lots of laws and things to protect the foster parent and the child and the parents of the child. So it's a different world now, and I haven't met too many other foster parents that have had as hard a time as that. They've had some ripped out of their heart over and over again, but not so illegal, doing it in the middle of the night on a Friday night.
Well, I imagine that just being a foster parent has a lot of heartaches, though, because of the children that you deal with. They're not coming from idyllic situations.
No.
They're coming from some of the worst situations.
And they're scared.
Right.
And they're bereaving. They're so missing their parents. It doesn't matter how bad your parents are. They still your parents, and you still love them. And so I remember teaching the kids that the Bible says, "Honor your father and mother, that your days may be long upon the earth." It doesn't say, if your mom and dad are good to you, you honor them. So several of my kids have had to do funerals for their parents, even though they weren't in their life all these years. They've had to watch them over and over again steal from the things they had and had acquired while they were in foster care.
Right.
So, so I've had to cry with them many times. And then I've had some that would turn their back on me and go back to their parents as if I was the enemy, you know. And so it's been hard back and forth, but a lot of them come back and say, "I wish I'd have listened to you. I wish
sure.
I'd have known then what I know now," you know.
Sure. And you know, the problem in today's world is that we are desperate for parents, foster parents, and
yes, we are.
And it's hard to get people to foster parent. I mean, there are people, and I think the people that are foster parents, sometimes they get taken advantage of because they do have that heart, and
yes,
they do,
do
know. Mm-hmm. And if we had more people that were foster parents, it would be more equal, and people would
That's
be able
right.
to have more of a life.
That's right. It's so needed. And I tell people all the time, it's the hardest job you'll ever love. And if I could just put something in their lives the short time I had them to make a difference when they grew up, then it was worth it. You know, to know that I made a difference in what would have happened to them and where they would be today.
So what made you write the book?
Well, the Lord, he just stayed on my back and kept saying, write a book. And I kept saying, Lord, I can't write a book. I don't know where to start. I fought over it about 20 years. And then every time I'd try to write, it was real sad. I couldn't write without crying.
That's therapeutic, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then one night my daughter said, Mama, get on Facebook. Andrew's trying to find you. And so I went on and I privately wrote him and told him my phone number. And I said, if you'd like to call us, this is our number. Before I could get it sent good, he was calling us. So we went to Applebee's, actually, and sat till 2:30 in the morning talking. Now, this little preemie baby I had that was so little was now 6'3" and tall and handsome fella. And he had realized he didn't have pictures first 2 years of his life. And he was going into the service and all, and he wanted to know why. And so they told him about that we had had him those 2 years. So we went through all our pictures and made sure he had all his baby pictures. Now, he doesn't love us like we love him, because he doesn't really know us.
Sure.
But he was at my first book signing. He gave me permission to finish the book, and he sat right beside me at that book signing. He calls me every once in a while and says, how you doing? You know, and he doesn't, you know, we don't push ourselves on him because we love him with a love that's just, you know, is there and will be there. But it took a lot of the pain away, just having him come back in our life.
Well, and you have to feel good knowing what happened. The rest of the story.
The rest of that, the story. See, that's what hurts a lot with a lot of these kids is when they take them back or they go to grandmother's or they go back to the home or they get adopted in another home. You can't help but say, wonder if they're okay. Wonder if they're doing all right. Where are they at now? Two of my Spanish boys got adopted in Columbia, and they are in Charleston in college and all that. So it's tickled me to find out, you know, where they are now, and different ones. Had one contact me from California the other day. How did you get in California? And they wanted some of their pictures. A lot of times they will track me down just so, because they have no memories or no, you know, no pictures of what they're like.
Well, Nita Hosley, you have to be proud, and I know that there's been a lot of heartache in your life, but to be able to bring joy and to help see another adult, another child turn into an adult and grow up and seek you out has to know that you were doing a good job out there to help when it was needed.
Well, I got a lot of grandchildren now.
You got a lot of grandchildren.
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. So for a woman who wanted to have children, couldn't have any children, you're doing all right. Is that what you're telling me?
God answered that prayer overly.
Overly. Well, that's great. Hey, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, WCRS, in our studios here. Coming up near the top of the hour, we got a little bit of time. You know, Nita Hosey, most people, I think, know you as the wedding planner. What was it? Praise Unlimited Weddings.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you started that business because you needed a way to raise money to support your habit of these children, right?
Well, the very first was because my parents weren't there for me, and I had to do my wedding. I had a borrowed dress, you know, all these things, and pieced together wedding. Well, then I got to looking at all my siblings, and there were 9 of us by then. There were steps and halves and holes, you know. So I did their weddings, and I practiced on them.
Well, you can on family.
Yeah. But then different jobs that I did would be around what children I had. And so I started thinking about how can I be a stay-at-home mom and have a lucrative business, you know, where that I can buy the shoes they need or clothes that they need to wear or whatever. And so I got to thinking, you know, I know when a wedding's going to happen. So I know when I need a babysitter. You know, it wasn't like a job you work, like when I was working in the florist, if there was a funeral, you don't know when someone's going to die and you are working all night long for days doing right. flowers and there's, sure. you know. So anyway, that it developed out of that. Then when I turned 50, of all things, all the kids we had then were older. I think we had 5 at that point, and I think 4 of them were around 15, 16 years old. So I decided that I would incorporate rental into the business. I had an opportunity to buy at a couple of florists and other businesses, and so I started renting out tablecloths and chairs and tables and centerpieces. And so I wouldn't just do one weekend. Maybe one weekend I might do 8 weddings. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody would just come and pick them up and take them. Well, then I knew Monday was going to be rough because I was having to wash all that stuff and put it back. But I knew when it was going to happen. So it became a very, very good business.
Did you have child labor?
Well, listen, my daughter will not even have a bedspread with a flower on it now. She doesn't want a flower in her house. So none
of the answer to that is yes, folks. You know, there are advantages to having that larger family, and they grow up learning the responsibilities.
There you go. There you go. Do you want a pair of skates? Then you help mama do this.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but
I don't think that's a bad thing. I think in some aspects in our homes, we've gotten away from that.
They don't know how to do anything, make their bed or do anything. And my kids knew how to wash their own clothes, and I never knew where they were going to go next.
Right.
So I wanted to prepare them for the workforce or for the next home they went into or the next group home they went into or whatever. So,
well, that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's very needed in today's world. Kids need to know how to do this. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of kids over the years go to work for me that have never run a vacuum cleaner. And I was like, yeah, we do that here. You got to run the vacuum cleaner. Well, how do you turn it on?
This is true.
So I think that's invaluable training. And I know that you have struggled a lot in your life, Nita. And I think to, what shall we say, put it all out there takes a lot of guts.
It was a hard one. I argued with the Lord about that one.
And
mom was 14 when she got married and 15 when she had me.
Right. So you literally grew up together.
That's right. We say that now. We have a great relationship now, and it's so different than it was when I was younger. And
I know there's a part in the book where you didn't even think you were a wanted child there.
Yeah.
And that's another part of it. I mean, you cover your whole growing up and what y'all went through as a family. And for people that have been in an abusive relationship, you speak to that in that book.
It touches a lot of areas, from your childhood to your marriage to being able to have children or not having children, to foster care and hurt and pain and going through panic attacks where you don't know what to do and on. But thank the Lord he's brought us on the other side. And
well, and now
of course now I'm saying these kids do not have my genes.
Well, that's true. But you know, and so that goes to the question, is it environment or is it genes? You know, what is it? But you, I understand, are in the process of getting ready to write another book.
Yes, I've gotten a little bit of it done. It's called Every Child Has a Story. And so I am interviewing each of the children that are still in my life.
Well, she's at 92, folks, so this could have a long of chapters to
Unfortunately, they're not all still in my life. Right. A lot of them went back to parents or grandparents or got adopted in other homes. But where they came from, mm-hmm. what happened to them while they were in foster care, and where are they now?
Well, I think that's going to be a good tell all. You are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. Nita, this has been so nice of you to come in and share your story, and hopefully people are going to say, you know, we've got local authors right here in Greenwood. They're having a fair, authors fair, this Saturday, November 17th, from 2 to 4 at the library in the auditorium there. Please go by and talk to these authors. If you're interested in what it takes to write a book, they might give you some tips.
And these would make good Christmas gifts or for someone else. Many of my books have been bought that someone else knew somebody was struggling with not being able to get pregnant or whatever. And they've bought them for other people. So.
Sure. So
there's
going to
be
gifts.
Children's books. Yep. There's several people that have written children's books.
So it's a great opportunity to, and of course, Uptown is doing their Uptown open house. So it's a great opportunity to be in the environment. But make sure you do stop by there this Saturday from 2 to 4 at the auditorium. Talk to all the authors. Tell Nita when you see her that what a good job she did right here on WCRS. The name of her book, I Can't Walk This Road Again, Foster Parenting and Adoption. Nita Hosey, thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.